the second piano sonata by Gatsina Bechevitz. It was played there by Anna Chalouka, and before that, Lily Boulanger's D'un matin de printemps, played by the Bucolica Piano Trio. And that ends today's lunchtime concert, which was presented live by Sarah Walker. Well, it's just gone 2 o'clock. You're listening to BBC Radio 3. I'm Kate Mollison, and this is a special edition of Afternoon Concert to celebrate International Women's Day. And I'm really delighted to have company in the studio this afternoon. Judith Weir, composer, master of the Queen's music, masterful storyteller in music. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Now, I should say that we're both slightly suffering from craggy, croaky voices, so bear with us today. But I think we'll get straight into music. We'll be hearing The Vanishing Bridegroom, an opera that I promise will work its way deep under your skin. Grand opera based on old supernatural folk tales from Scotland, told in incredibly rich and eerie and sometimes caustic music, some great broad Scots dialect and Gaelic too. Two tales from the Outer Hebrides, one from Sutherland, all condensed into a brutal family saga. Judith, how do you intertwine all those tales into one very compact opera?
Well, completely, almost coincidentally, I picked these three stories because, as you say, they were so vivid and striking. But I noticed the first one was about a girl in a forced marriage, really, which she got out of. And the next one was about a woman having a baby. And the third one was about a young woman actually leaving home and setting off for, I hope, an optimistic future. So I decided to make that three generations of the same story. So, as you've rightly said, it is a family saga, and the characters reappear some years older and wiser.
And, of course, we do go into the supernatural realm as well.
Yes, well, that's a must-have, I think, in opera, and very exciting element of folk stories also.
I like the idea of supernatural being a must-have in opera. Let's come back to that. But first, we will hear part one of The Vanishing Bridegroom, The Inheritance. It's a story from Bembecula in which a man dies, but his legacy is missing. One of his three sons must have stolen it, but which one? The doctor investigates by telling the sons a tale of a woman who was forbidden to marry her lover and was instead married off to a richer man. We'll hear soprano Eilish Tynan, mezzo Anna Stephanie, tenor Andrew Tortoise, baritone Owen Gilhooly and bass baritone Jonathan Lemalu. The BBC Symphony Orchestra and singers conducted by Martin Brabbins.
There was a man, and he had three sons. When he was on the bed of death, he called for them. Thank you.
A rich
white man.
came the day. Saying you cannot get married, you cannot get married.
Between your two arms, till
produced a new suitor whose prospects were better. The day of their wedding.
Thank you. She had not gone far when she came to a thick wood. Quickmut, war unwahrscheinlich.
Took her to her husband.
I will take you home again myself.
She showed him the light that the priest had written.
I will take you home again myself.
And her husband was
Yet he did well, but
best of all were the two robbers who ran away with the money.
Money trumps love, I'm afraid, and the doctor keeps a close eye on the dead man's three sons as he tells them that dark parable. Their reactions give away who the thief was. That was part one of The Vanishing Bridegroom by Judith Weir, and Judith is with me in the studio here. Judith, one woman among all those male voices and all of them passing judgment on her. I really feel her isolation.
Yes, this is the bad part of the opera, which we've just got through. I felt this was very akin to the whole problem of arranged marriages around the world, about women being bought and sold into slavery and prostitution. And there it was in one of our old Scottish folk tales. So not a very cheering part of the story.
Hmm. Listening to all those beautiful overlapping male voices, I wondered, are there hints of the psalm singing traditions of the Western Isles?
Very much so. That was what I was trying to evoke in that piece of music.
Where, of course, traditionally women were not allowed to go to the funerals.
That's right. I think until not so long ago, that would have been the norm.
Mm-hmm. One thing that strikes me so much about your music is you never have anything too much going on. You have an incredible knack of concision. I mean, one of your operas, King's Harald Saga, you cover an Icelandic saga with a cast of 1,000, a whole Norwegian army failing to invade England in 1066. And this is told by a soprano, single soprano, in 10 minutes' time. what's your knack?
Oh, well, often it's not a knack but a necessity. Nobody was offering for King Harald's saga a choir of thousands. So there was just one soprano there, the great Jane Manning. And so that's what the piece was. But I do feel that I want to hear what I write, and sometimes it doesn't help to have too many people or too much material going on at the same time.
You want to hear it? You mean you want to hear the storytelling clearly? Is that it?
That, of course, and just the clarity of melody and any gestures in the instruments. I want them to come across loud and clear.
What about the element of folk tales? Because so often you turn to folk tales in your operas. Why?
Again, these seem to me very clear in what they're saying. They're not full of metaphors in their language. Usually people say what they mean, that the tales say what's happening. There's even an absence of adjectives and description. And I think that's very good for opera, where we are, as audience members, bombarded with impressions. So a clear story at the centre of it, even though in the opera we're hearing at the moment there's quite a lot of narrative path crossing going on, something clear at the base of it is very important to me.
We'll hear part two now of the Vanishing Bridegroom, and now we meet the fairies, who are not entirely benevolent. They sing in Gaelic. Who are these fairies?
Well, I think in the story they are the dead people who live under the hills and in a wonderful, warm paradise. But they also beckon living people to come and join them, as happens in this act.
OK, so the bridegroom and the bride have given birth to a daughter. The bridegroom heads off to fetch a priest for a christening, but on the way he is lured towards a brightly lit hillside, the land of the young. His friend is accused of his murder.
house. 10 miles back. A child on the island again. A little girl. A christening and a mouth to feed. More expense.
Thank you. People just disappear, that's what they do. They decide the spur of the moment. They just get up and leave. They don't say a word to a soul. They decide on the spur of the moment. They just walk away the distance. They just leave.
Thank you. At sunrise, a man who lights the lowlands, he sweeps the plains, he stirs the ocean. That it falls as rain. White is the earth there, blue the water, every hill the color of foxglove. Let me be for an instant.
An instant. See my face, see my gray hair. Years have passed.
I was away but a moment. In the babe.
it's time we went and found him.
Don't be fooled by the lights on the hill. Those fairies aren't as sweet as they might first seem. That was part two of The Vanishing Bridegroom by Judith Weir. Judith, I love the combination of realism and fairy tale. I mean, you said earlier that supernatural elements are essential in opera, and so often in your music you have this quality of enchantment, of using quite plain-speaking musical language to take us somewhere very fantastical.
Well, thank you very much. That is the intention. I think an opera, it's a long space of time. There has to be some feeling of transformation, of something very magical. And that is what I have tried to do in this piece.
How does that work in music? How do you conjure the supernatural?
In this particular piece, it's very simple stuff. Using particularly quiet textures, very, very richly tonal textures. In the act we've just heard, when the fairies appear, they're singing these extremely sweet harmonies, which contrast a bit with the other material. I think in the history of opera as a whole, it's often, yes, very unusual tone colours, sometimes things whistling away up at the top, or conversely, very low voices. There's a long lecture to be given about this.
Just while we were listening to that act, we were talking about Stuart McCrae's opera, The Bottle Imp, that premiered at Scottish Opera a couple of years ago, and he also used a trick that you just mentioned, the very high kind of eerie fluty sounds when anything supernatural was happening. I wonder if that's a trick he got from you.
Well, I think it's more from horror films of all kinds. Just that idea of very creepy stuff seems to be in the top high register.
Yeah, interesting that. Also, the mix of musical worlds that you bring into this opera is just so beguiling. I know that in the late 1980s, you moved to Glasgow and you shared a house with a flute player, actually the composer Eddie Maguire. What are the Scottish influences in this opera?
Well, there are many. The opening act, which we heard half an hour ago, the opening sound, the famous long psalms sung in the Outer Hebrides, mm-hmm. Strangely staggered renditions of the psalms. In the second act, which we've just heard, the walking songs, again from the Outer Hebrides, these were chorus songs sung by women in the wool and mm-hmm. tweed industry.
So that's W-A-U-L.
Indeed.
Yeah, not walking.
And in the act to come, I think, folk ballad. There's a made-up-by-me folk ballad at the beginning. Two traditional words. It's a sort of riddle-type folk song that opens the third act.
Well, let's hear that third act. The story goes that a handsome and prosperous stranger arrives to woo the daughter, who is now a young woman. The girl is suspicious, quite right, and a passing preacher tells her that this stranger is obviously the devil. I really love that the charming stranger can't fool the orchestra here. Listen out for how they give him this phosphorescent accompaniment, like we were just talking about, almost like a musical smell that hangs around him. So, part three of The Vanishing Bridegroom by Judith Weir.
There was a man riding through the east. Yeah.
Oh! Thank you.
The orchestra knew it all along. The handsome stranger was not to be trusted, and luckily the girl did not fall for him either. In that complete performance of The Vanishing Bridegroom by Judith Weir, we heard soprano Eilish Tynan, mezzo Anna Stephanie, tenor Andrew Tortoise, baritone Owen Gilhooly, and the bass baritone Jonathan Lemalou. The BBC Symphony Orchestra and singers were conducted by Martin Brabbins. Well, Judith, you wrote that opera 30 years ago now. It premiered in 1990 at Scottish Opera. What does it feel like listening back?
Well, now, of course, it's fantastic sitting here. That recording is there on the CD. Nothing can go wrong. There it is. It's such a wobbly feeling at first. You write the opera, that's such a struggle. We had a tremendously complicated but great production at Scottish Opera in 1990, but so many difficult things always with premiere productions. Mm-hmm. And through the years, there have been other productions. There's been quite a lot of struggle, I think no more than for any other modern opera, but it's not easy. But somehow to have got through with all that and to have that lovely recording, I feel so happy, actually, so joyous.
Interesting. While we were listening there, you were saying that you wrote an alternative version of the text that didn't include so many dialect words.
This last act, I just thought, and in fact it's true, it has been performed in places like Los Angeles, and they wouldn't know that to spear someone is to ask them something. I felt I had to give some guidance. And
actually, really, the music says it all in that opera.
Yeah, I don't think that word for word, it doesn't particularly matter here and there what is said.
Well, what a joy to hear that complete performance and to have you with us to guide us through. And luckily, you're staying with us for the whole of this afternoon concert. You are listening to Radio 3. I'm Kate Mollison, and it is International Women's Day. Judith Weir is here keeping me company for the rest of the afternoon. She's chosen some of her favourite music by women composers. So let's start with an overture by Elisabeth Jacquet de la Guerre, a brilliant composer who worked for the court of Versailles. She was a favourite of Louis XIV, who called her original, which is high praise indeed. This is her overture to Céphale and Procri, played by Musica Fiortia, directed by Daniela Dolci.
Thank you.
Musica Fiorita, directed by Daniela Dolci. The overture to Cephale et Procri by Elizabeth Jacquet de la Guerre. Judith Weir, it's so tantalising to wonder what she was like, this ambitious and risk-taking woman who managed to navigate the quite toxic politics of Versailles. What do you think her music says about her?
Well, in a way, it sounds absolutely generic French Baroque music, which says that she was an absolutely regular composer in the French music scene. And it's extraordinary. We're in the situation of having to dig these people out of history where they've been buried away. She was obviously a very major, well-known composer of the time.
Mm, absolutely. Born in the heart of Paris, was giving recitals in Versailles at the age of five. I mean, she was clearly a very talented woman.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, next we go to music by Kate Whitley, typical of today's younger generation composers, I think, because she really makes her own opportunities happen. She doesn't wait for commissions to just land on her doorstep. She co-founded the Multi-Story Orchestra in a car park in Peckham. Is she a composer that you know well personally?
Well, she lives quite nearby me, and so we often bump into each other, and I love to go down to Peckham and hear the concerts that the orchestra give.
What's the atmosphere there?
Well, remarkably good, given that it's a real car park. once you get used to all the concrete, it's always packed with people, local people. And the piece that we're going to hear, I Am, I Say, involves a whole lot of local school children. So there's a real local feeling.
As you say, we'll hear I Am, I Say. It's a noble tradition of writing music for children that really takes its performers seriously.
Yes, indeed. This piece has three verses, and Kate and her librettist Sabrina Mahouf actually asked the children to write the third verse themselves. Mm. But it's a real proper piece of music. I don't want anyone to think this is some worthy... It is educational, but it's not something that's trying to show virtuous outreach. It's a true creation, a wonderful one, a fabulous orchestral part accompanying the children, and a couple of beautiful solo parts that arise out of nowhere towards the later part of the piece.
Excellent. Right, let's hear it.
Thank you.
just keeps going. I Am, I Say by Kate Whitley. Sarah Jane Lewis was the soprano. Ashley Riches, the bass baritone, with choirs from Kender, Lyndhurst and St John's and St Clement's primary schools. The multi-story orchestra was conducted by Christopher Stark. Well, next we go to the Finnish composer Kaija Saariaho. She's written luminous, dramatic operas, and her music takes us to some pretty dark eddies of the unconscious. Judith Weir, you said that you just couldn't choose the music for this afternoon without including Saariaho. Why is that?
Well, I think she's one of the most major composers in the world today of any gender, and there's no question that she's a formative influence on new music, certainly of the present century. I've always been particularly impressed by her mastery of electronic elements in her work, but in the most subtle, elegant way, so that you're not being battered over the head with electronic sound. It's just that she uses technical additions to acoustic sound. We're going to hear a piece, Petals, featuring a solo cello, and it just becomes a much bigger cello with all sorts of extra bits on the end. Never do you feel that you're going to be deafened or some of the usual hazards of too much amplification and electronics. She has just enlarged, it seems to me, the vocabulary of music.
That was Petals by Kaya Sarriaho, a piece for cello and electronics from the late 1980s. Scott Roller was a cellist and Thomas Neuhaus on electronics. Well, Sean Rafferty has just walked into the studio. Hello, Sean.
Good afternoon.
What's coming up?
Well, a lot, of course. You've been lucky to have Judith Weir with you. Lovely to
Absolutely.
See her sitting in the studio.
Yeah.
We have Erilyn Wallen coming in to keep me in the straight and narrow. She always has something sort of pertinent to say, keeps the discipline going and a bit of a laugh. She's also singing one of her songs, one of her Friday songs wrote for Albrecht. Ange Hardy is joining us too. She's been nominated BBC Radio 2 Folk Awards. Absolutely terrific. Writes very much about her own experiences. The Vihan Quartet are coming into play and they're playing music by Mika Hauselin and Cheryl Frances Hoad. So it's female composers. They're playing for us, obviously. And Jane Glover will be joining me before she does her great gig at LSO St Luke's this evening.
Brilliant. Busy afternoon, as always.
Busy afternoon.
Excellent. Well,
usual time, though.
Thank you for
5 o'clock, on the nail.
Excellent.
I wouldn't miss it. Thank you.
Keep listening for that.
Thank you for the lemon biscuit. The lovely lemon biscuits in the Earl Grey, of course, is what I come for, really. Thank you.
Don't tell them. 5 o'clock in tune, as always, with Sean Rafferty. Onwards now to Barbara Strozzi, and I would have loved to have known this woman, a soprano, poet, composer, famously also a prostitute. She lived in 17th century Venice in an era of radical libertines and intellectuals. She studied with Cavalli and took part in an illustrious group of Venetian poets and philosophers who met under the name Academy of the Unknowns to discuss new trends in Venetian music. She published 125 works, which made her one of the most prolific composers in Venice in the mid-17th century. Here's one of them. This is Heraclitus in Love. Barbara Strozzi's Heraclitus in Love. She wrote that music to sing herself. The soprano we just heard was Dorothée Leclerc with cellist Leira Hellbader, Yasunori Umemura on theorbo and Yuri Vinokur on harpsichord. Well, on now to Arlene Sierra, an American-born UK-based composer. And shamefully, she's not a composer that I know a huge amount about, Judith Weir. Would you be good enough to introduce us?
Well, you've said where she comes from. I first met her about 20 years ago. She was in my class at Dartington. And later on, she was my boss when I taught a bit at Cardiff University. And she's the head of the composition programme there. A lot of her work has been coming out on record, I'm glad to say, and there are quite a few orchestral pieces to choose from, which is a great thing for a composer, I suppose, still in her 40s, making a quick guess there. Mm-hmm. And one important strand of her music is about nature, but not in the way that most people descriptively try and copy nature into music. It's very much about the processes of nature, about the tiny molecular structure and how it gradually bends things so that they change. It can very well be seen in this piece Aquilo, which is about a wind, the northeast wind, and it's such a marvellous, it is a description, but it also gives the actual feeling of a wind blowing, of the way that the landscape is affected by wind. It's got constant propulsive energy, but very inner energy, true elegant energy.
Thank you.
That was Aquilo by Arlene Sierra, the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Jack Van Steen. Well, we turn next to Judith Bingham and The Secret Garden, which is a magical piece that imagines what the Garden of Eden was like after Adam and Eve were kicked out. Judith Weir, The Secret Garden seems to be a piece that would be right up your street, all those mystical elements.
I absolutely love it. It is such a beautiful listen, a continuous piece with so many interesting thoughts in it for organ and chorus only, so in a way quite economical in a sense as well. Unfortunately, this afternoon, we're just going to be hearing an organ solo out of it called Vol de Nuit. That's what comes of trying to listen to all your favourite pieces by the whole of one gender in 3 hours.
Right, there's a wee bit to get through.
Yeah, exactly. But this is an exciting, fast, sort of commanding movement for the organ, and I believe is about the relationship between orchids and moths, which is apparently very close.
That was Vol de Nuit from The Secret Garden by Judith Bingham, a version for solo organ played by Tom Winpenny. Well, from that very intricate world of orchids and moths, we move to stauncher places, Sofia Gubaidulina, another composer, Judith Weir, that you've described as indispensable to today's programme. Why is that?
Well, again, an absolutely major presence in contemporary music over the last 3 decades in the West. And of course, before that, as a kind of slightly dissident composer, she was nevertheless very central to young composers in the USSR. She's a completely experimental composer still in her late 80s now. And the piece we're going to hear is the fourth quartet that I think comes from the early 90s. Not only is there a foreground quartet, there are 2 pre-recorded quartets in the background making all sorts of strange noises. And it's really quite a screamer, this piece, for the majority of the first movement, which lasts about 8 minutes. And then there's an absolutely angelic end to the work, played... The performers seem to be beating on the strings with little... either glass or plastic spheres. You just get a beautiful resonance. She just is always doing something surprising, different, extraordinary, and I've chosen this particular one.
Thank you. Thank you.
The sound of little mallets and plastic globe spheres bouncing on the strings. The fourth string quartet by Sofia Gubaidulina, played there by the Kronos Quartet. Well, Judith Weir, we're going to end this afternoon with your own music. This is a piece called Moon and Star, written for Prom 1995, a setting of an Emily Dickinson poem. The sky, stars, outer space, are these regular sources of inspiration?
Very much so. I don't know where this comes from, but very much my music uses high resonances, the idea of staring into the unknown. And Emily Dickinson, too, makes so many references in this poem, Our Moon and Star. You are very far, so it's inclining to a very, very distant point in your imagination.
Hmm. And musically, how does that work? We were talking earlier about how you conjure supernatural sounds. How do you conjure the sky?
I think it is high up in the register, and with a big symphony orchestra, as on this piece, plus chorus, there's plenty of opportunity for that. And it means that when you do write in the bass register, it jumps out of you in very sharp relief.
Hmm. Well, let's hear it. This is the BBC Singers and BBC Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Martin Brabbins, in Moon and Star by Judith Weir. The BBC Symphony Orchestra and singers were conducted by Martin Brabbins. That was Moon and Star, words by Emily Dickinson, music by Judith Weir. And I'm so thankful that Judith has been my guest all afternoon. She's really got in the spirit of our International Women's Day programme and chose the music that we heard this afternoon. All of the music that we're playing on Radio 3 today for the whole of the day is written by women. Judith, for you, what's the point in doing something like this?
In a way, to show that music by women is just like music by men. It's in the world there. It's happening. There are very prominent composers. There are brilliant young people coming up. And there's absolutely no reason at all for it to be ignored or pushed aside. It's absolutely central to contemporary music today.
And we've kind of shown up anybody, any of the non-believers who thought we wouldn't have enough.
This is something that's been said many times. Could you possibly manage to do a whole day's women's music? Our problem has been getting rid of all the things we wanted to play this afternoon and giving but a very small selection.
Judith Weir, thank you so much for coming in. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. A pleasure for me too.
Well, you are listening to Radio 3. It's 5 o'clock this Thursday evening, International Women's Day. Time now for In Tune with Sean Rafferty.
Good afternoon. And the theme continues. On this day, we have the composer Erolyn Wallen, who's singing. Hello.
Hello.
She's here. That's not her song. It'll be singing later. So is the renowned folk artist Anne Chardy. Good evening.
Good evening.
She's here too. And we have the Vihan Quartet playing female composers. That's all after the BBC News with Neil Sleat.
The Home Secretary has described the poisoning of a former Russian spy and his daughter in Salisbury as a brazen and reckless act. Sergei and Yulia Skripal were found slumped on a bench in the city on Sunday after being attacked with a nerve agent. In a statement to the Commons, Amber Rudd said the couple were still in a critical condition, but the police officer who helped them is now awake and talking. She said it's likely he was exposed to the same substance. He's been named as Detective Sergeant Nick Bailey. New figures show waiting time performance in accident and emergency departments in England hit its lowest level since the target was introduced. The rate was 85% in February, marginally lower than the previous 2 months. The statistics also show 41,000 fewer operations were carried out during December 2017 and January when compared with the same period a year earlier. Two 18-year-old men have been arrested in connection with racially aggravated public order offences after a black student at Nottingham Trent University reported racist abuse. Rufara Chisango posted a video of the alleged abuse on social media. A large search is underway off the coast of Tyneside for a passenger missing from a ferry. The ferry was en route from the Netherlands to North Shields when an appeal was put out to the Coast Guard. A helicopter and six lifeboats are involved in the search. The EU has written to Britain demanding more than £2 billion in unpaid customs duties. The government's accused of failing to tackle a scam that was uncovered a year ago involving the import of shoes and clothing from China. A Kenyan man who underwent brain surgery by mistake says he was unconscious when he was admitted to hospital. Samuel Kimani said he didn't know why he was operated on. Kenyatta National Hospital has apologised after admitting that the identity tags of two patients had been mixed up. And the weather. Most places will be dry with clear spells and feel quite chilly. There will be few wintry showers for Scotland. BBC News and weather at very nearly 3 minutes past five.
Neil Sleat, thank you. Well, it's a celebration of female creativity on In Tune this day, beginning in the early 20th century with a composer that Satie called his musical daughter, the only female member of Les Six, Germaine Taillefer.